Hi, can I come in?
Yes, welcome.
Are you Quato?
I am Quato, Mr. Edinburgh.
Oh, great. It's great to meet you. I'm a little bit concerned about my health. My friend recommended I come. He said you were the best nutritionist in the city.
You've come to the right place, as long as you're willing to open your mind.
I'm open-minded.
Also your mouth.
My mouth?
More practically.
For the food that...
Yes.
Got it.
Nutrition-related humor.
Oh, yeah, sorry, very funny. It's just a little... It's hard for me to just be comfortable because you're... the way you look. No offense.
It's all right, Mr. Edinburgh, as a powerful psychic. I'm aware of your discomfort.
Yeah.
Also the discomfort in your lower colon.
Yes, which is kind of what I wanted to talk to you about. And we don't have to get into, like, super detail, but I have
your
been...
poops have been weird.
Yes, exactly. So do you have any advice or, like, what should I do?
Have you thought of restricting gluten and eggs?
Eggs?
Yes.
Is that what you said? Okay.
Eggs.
No, I haven't thought of that. I don't eat that many eggs very often. I mean, sometimes I have like a breakfast burrito, so I guess that, yeah, I do have some eggs.
You should restrict gluten.
Okay, what are like, gluten foods that I should avoid?
Breads, pasta. Honestly, you can look that up on your own. Here's a worksheet with a list of high gluten.
Oh, great.
Foods.
So I don't have to look it up on my own because you just gave me it on a sheet.
Yeah, I forgot that I had that. What is your feeling on the nightshade family?
What is that, like sweet potatoes? And
peppers, eggplants.
I eat. I love peppers. I love sweet potato.
I think we start on an overall restriction diet.
Okay.
Of course, if you have an open mind.
Yeah, no, I told you. I have an open mind. I feel like I have to be open-minded just to talk to you.
Here's another worksheet.
Oh, great. Okay.
This is all the nightshades. I say we get rid of these to start, and the gluten, and of course, no eggs.
Okay, sweet. Also, I eat most of my food out of a dumpster. Is that... I don't even really look at what I'm eating most of the time.
I'm a disgusting mutant man baby inside of a 40-year-old... Richard Gere, baby's chest.
No, it's not Richard Gere.
Oh, it might be. I can't look up. I don't know.
I know it's not.
I like to pretend that it is. But
no,
the point is, even I find you repulsive.
Right. That's what I thought.
You're a trash animal, Mr. Edinburgh.
What do you eat?
The blood of Richard Gere, I think.
It's not Richard Gere, stop saying
Pretty
that.
Sure it's Richard
it's
Gere.
It's not. That would be a huge cameo.
Open your mind.
Science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight? Bad science.
Hi everybody, welcome to Bad Science. I am your host, Ethan Edinburgh, and today I'm very excited because we're talking about one of the most ridiculous films of all time, probably, Total Recall, an Arnold Schwarzenegger film, and I'm here talking with planetary geologist from JPL, Dr. Laura Kerber. How's it going, Laura?
Great, how are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm very excited that you're here. You have a beautiful NASA shirt, so it's very appropriate. I appreciate that. Or do you wear that every day?
Oh yeah, pretty much every... I have a rotating wardrobe of NASA t-shirts.
Really?
Today, yes.
Different colors?
Yes. This one's glow in the dark, so.
Really? Yeah. Turn off the lights. Is that to make like the whole, decision-making process easier, or do you just love the shirts and...
I would probably wear a NASA shirt every day if I didn't work at NASA, and I think I just got the job at NASA, so I'd have an excuse.
To wear the shirts.
I'm sorry, how many of them do you have?
I probably have like 5.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. So that covers the work week. Then
so
I have
on the
to
weekend,
do
you, yeah. you're, it's yeah. it's casual weekend. You don't.
Then
wear
I have
NASA.
To wear a Jet Propulsion Lab.
You wear JPL.
Oh, JPL
shirts. Yeah,
it's just 5 of those. All right, great. Well, we're also talking with one of my favorite stand-ups, Brent Weinbach. How's it going, Brent?
Oh, I'm fine. Thanks for having me. And Total Recall is one of my favorite movies of all time, and so I'm glad to be here to talk about it.
Yeah, I'm happy that you said that, because we usually, allow the comedians to pick the movies, and so when you said Total Recall, I was very psyched up. I hadn't seen it in a while. I did remember it, vaguely being like kind of crazy, cartoonish, absurd, and then I rewatched it with some friends recently, and we had a blast watching this movie. So if you're listening and you haven't watched Total Recall, that's exactly what I recommend.
Oh, I guess we're going to be able to spoil things in this podcast?
Big time. Okay. Well, big time. I mean, we can do like a little review for people that haven't seen it, but yeah, people know if they're listening, you know, we're going to talk about the whole
and
film.
Dr. Kerber, you got an opportunity to watch the movie as well.
Oh yeah, it's actually one of my favorite films as well.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Cool. Why is it one of your favorite films? Let's start there.
So it has to do with Mars, and I'm obsessed with Mars, and so all the time everyone at my job's like, "Get your ass to Mars." When they remade the movie more recently and they had it, you know, in Australia instead of Mars, we all went to see it because we're like, oh, yay, they're remake of Total Recall. And then we're like, there isn't even Mars in it.
I refuse to watch the remake just because I don't want to taint the legacy of the original.
Yeah, I haven't seen the remake, but I kind of wanted to after watching this one again.
I do not at all. I just don't I don't want to ruin the sacredness of the original movie,
So, and you saw the more recent one, and you're saying they don't go to Mars at all? It's not mentioned?
Yeah, they have an elevator that goes down through the center of the core of the Earth and then comes out in Australia. And so the only place that's livable on the Earth is the UK and Australia, and you have to go back and forth. So if you ever want to talk about the science of that movie, I would say it's even worse.
Oh, so it's a different story.
Yeah, I mean, it's the exact same story where they have a colony in Australia, and it's got resources that are limited, and you know, it's the same where he kind of goes on this adventure and you don't know in his mind and this, all that stuff, but memory. Except for to Mars, it's to this colony in Australia.
Mm-hmm. Sounds very strange. It's a sketchy move, in my opinion. Why not? I mean, Mars is like such a huge part of the first movie, and it's just so much more interesting, right?
Yeah, and when they go in the elevator through the core, they all have the same gravity all the way down, and then at the very center of the Earth, the gravity reverses.
Oh, really? Just right at the center?
Yeah. Right, yeah, there's a tipping point. You know, one thing, before we get into any science stuff about this movie, mm-hmm. I just wanted to say that while it's going to be fun talking about the science and stuff involved, I decided that the whole movie is a dream anyway.
Okay.
Which is somewhat left ambiguous, you know, right?
Sure.
But I actually think there's a lot of clues and evidence to support the idea that it is a dream.
Okay.
The whole thing, the way through, or an implanted memory or something like that, or some imagination of some sort, you know?
Okay.
And therefore, any kind of flaws in science or logic or any contrivances are allowed because it's a dream. It's a fantasy. His fantasy.
Just the nature of, like, the tone of the movie, I think you have to just give into it and anything goes here, obviously.
To be honest, watching it this most recent time, I actually had... If it wasn't a fantasy or a dream, mm-hmm. then I would have issues with some of the contrivances. There were things that were just a little too coincidental and a little bit too easy, you know? Contrived. So that I would have an issue if it wasn't a fantasy. But making the decision that this is a fantasy all the way through, mm-hmm. that he's acting out this fantasy narrative, then, hey, anything can go, you know?
See, I have the opposite opinion. I think that it was totally real, and it all actually happened.
Okay. I mean, I saw a thing, which, by the way, you guys have to see if you haven't seen it, called Imagining Total Recall, which is like a half-an-hour documentary that came out in, like, 2001 about the film. Also hilarious, by the way, and just mm-hmm. totally ridiculous, and I don't even think that they realize it, the people who have made this thing, but there's a lot of just ridiculous interviews, and I don't know, everybody's like doing voices for some reason. It's very strange, but definitely check it out. But I wanted to ask you why it's one of your favorite movies so much. She is obsessed with Mars.
Well, here's why. Where do I start? I mean, first of all, the special effects are really good.
Yeah.
I mean, I really can't stand CGI, and there is CGI used a little bit in this movie during the X-ray stuff.
But that's
the
only.
It looks good. Well, also it looks appropriate. I mean, it looks. You know, it doesn't look. All the other stuff is practical and uses miniatures, and mm-hmm. you know, all of that stuff is, you know, really tangible and looks real and looks great. Still looks great now. 30 years later, right?
So true.
And so. So that's cool, and it's just an innovative movie as far as just the action and the story is interesting, and Arnold Schwarzenegger is great. This is one of his greatest performances. There's some great funny lines from him,
mm-hmm.
When he's describing his ideal woman, and he says, brunette, athletic, sleazy, demure. And there's some really good... You know how... Arnold Schwarzenegger is really good at making really intense faces.
Oh, yeah.
This is the max.
I mean,
he doesn't go... This is the most intense his faces ever get in any movie that, to the point where there's... I mean, and it's heightened with the effects as well. You know, so when his eyes are bugging out, and
right.
or he's pulling the bug out of his nose. You know,
oh yeah,
there's so many great moments. I mean, here's the thing: this is one of my favorite movies because there's so many great moments in the movie. Pulling the bug out of his nose,
awesome.
The 2 weeks woman, you know, thing.
Yeah,
it's such a great moment. I love that scene.
I want to talk
and
about that scene.
There's
but...
just so many awesome things in this movie. Just everything is about it is awesome, And it's a cool. It's a fun adventure, you know. And it's back when action movies were good, you know. When I would want to go see action movies,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't care about action movies anymore at all.
Right.
There's nothing that intrigues me about action movies. This had cool innovation, cool effects. Arnold Schwarzenegger's best work, probably one of his best, and Paul Verhoeven's one of his. I liked him. I liked this more than RoboCop.
Yeah, I think I like it more than RoboCop 2. And that's a great pitch, like, just for people that haven't seen it right there. So, like, if you don't want to see the movie now, then I don't know what the hell's wrong with you.
I will say, though, if you haven't seen it, I hope you're not listening to this podcast. Because we've already ruined a lot of things for you, and I feel like it's...
That's okay.
Yeah.
I feel like they're used to it. And also...
I guess this is just an endorsement to watch it again.
Yes.
Because it actually...
I think it would be difficult to ruin it because of how crazy it is. You know, you can listen to us describe it, but to actually see this thing unfold is really, I don't know, it's like nothing else.
So many great moments. I mean, there's so many great moments.
Jam-packed.
I could just go through the whole thing. There's so many like neat little idiosyncratic moments, you know,
mm-hmm.
from the three-breasted woman to the robotic taxi driver and the way that he does his lines in between and intense scenes happening and stuff. And
yeah.
It's just so good. Everything is so good in that movie.
It's so true.
Many good special effects also. The effects are awesome. That's like the best part of the movie.
I think won a special achievement award at the Academy Awards for the special effects that mm-hmm. year. So
I think it was like the most expensive movie. Oh, it was the second most expensive movie ever made.
That's right.
Rambo 3. Rambo 3 was number one.
Rocky
3?
Or maybe
Rambo. I think it was Rambo 3, I think.
Okay.
I don't know. I could be wrong, yeah. either way, it was a Sylvester Stallone movie.
In a third installment of a
Sylvester Stallone movie.
Yeah.
But it was the second most expensive movie ever made, and it shows because the movie is definitely well crafted.
Yeah, it's crazy. The sets.
So I keep on thinking of awesome things in the movie, like Quado. What a cool. Who thought of this idea that he's, you know, attached to this guy's stomach and that it's. I mean, I'm ruining everything about the movie right now.
No,
so
please do.
Again, but it's. And the puppet looks so good in that, too.
Yeah.
Everything is so creative. The movie's so creative. That's what's so good about it.
Yeah.
For me, you know. But there are, having said that, there are some contrivances if you do understand the movie as really
reality
and not mm-hmm. a fantasy. We can go into that. We can go into why you think it's that, or if you want to go
yeah,
there,
yeah.
or
we can go anywhere,
or we can get into the science of it. I don't want to, you know.
We can go anywhere we want. I'm just glad that we are establishing how awesome this movie is and
cool
convincing people to go watch it.
It's one of your favorites, actually.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
as a scientist.
Yeah,
too,
I'm a huge Arnold Schwarzenegger fan, and I'm a huge fan of these kind of crazy, zany movies. And so then add the fact that it has Mars, and add the fact that there's this ambiguity as to whether or not it really happened. And
yeah, I love that too.
Yeah, it's and the sort of I think it was one of the first movies I watched where the future was so messy. You know, most of the movies I had watched, there's like a bunch of futuristic movies where the future is very clean
mm-hmm.
and, you know, like Apple designed all the
right.
buildings of the future. And then there's a series of movies like in Minority Report when they get into the advertising of the future. And
mm-hmm.
I always imagine, of course, there's going to be commercials everywhere and, you know, dirty cities everywhere still. And so for me, you know, it was just the order in which I watched movies in the 80s. This was kind of my first introduction to that kind of future.
Yeah,
which
dirty future.
Yeah.
Dirty future, yeah.
I agree. I love the undertone of like environmental destruction, you know,
that's
the reason why Mars is so messed up, because a corporation owns the oxygen control. And so, of course, all they're doing is like making you work for it and not treating you right and trying to sell you, you know, Pepsi and Coke and God knows what.
And they're showing you they're kind of, maybe there's a statement here, but they're kind of, you know, these deformities in the people on Mars, it's because of the environment being unhealthy, you know? So it's like kind of making this sort of, there's this statement of...
Yeah.
You know,
they said in the doc
environment,
a little bit,
you know?
Yeah, that they were trying to, you know, subtly, of course, because the whole movie is really about, you know, this guy's memory and the action and all this stuff, but they're also trying to say, we're ruining the Earth, and this is what's going to happen to us if we keep going this way.
Mm-hmm.
So I love, if any movie can say that, especially in like a cool alien mutant subtle way, then that's awesome. But let's start with something that you mentioned in the intro dream sequence. And this happens actually a couple of times, thank God, because it's awesome. When he's exposed to the atmosphere on Mars, his eyes bulge out and he's like crazy convulsive, you know, and it looks great. But so I wanted your take on that. Like, is that like totally absurd or would our cranium react that way?
Yeah, so what happens when you're first exposed to that low of pressure is that all of the water on your mucous membranes, your eyeballs and your tongue and somewhat your skin, but mostly those places, your saliva starts to evaporate and then boil, actually.
Whoa.
And so you're going to dry out really quickly. The other thing that happens instantaneously is that your lungs are filled with air, and if you don't let the air out, your lungs can actually rupture.
Okay.
So they won't rupture out of your body, but they would rupture inside, and your eardrums would probably rupture as well.
Wow.
And so then the thing that happens to you after that is your blood starts to boil. Like what the astronauts do on the space station is, you know, divers, they go down beneath the sea and then they can't come up too quickly.
Right, right.
And that's because the nitrogen in their blood comes out as bubbles, and then the bubbles can move their way through the circulatory system and cause problems in the heart and the brain. And so on the space station, what they do is they pre-breathe pure oxygen for several hours to get all the nitrogen out of their blood. And so then when they go in their spacesuit, the spacesuit's at a much lower pressure than the space station is. And so that they do that so that they can move their arms around in their spacesuits, because otherwise it would be way too stiff.
Wow.
And so they have to be really careful to be subjected to sudden depressurization events, because they could get the bends and you'd have to put them in a pressure capsule. A couple times there have been issues where a guy gets stuck in a vacuum chamber. That happened once.
Okay.
And since everything in your body is kind of held in by your skin, and your skin is actually really good at holding in water and pressure, so you don't like explode.
Thank God.
But you slowly start to swell up. And so in one case, one of the guys that, you know, Felix Baumgartner, who jumped from the stratosphere, there was a guy before him that jumped from the stratosphere, and some other people that went up to really high altitudes. And one of them had a problem with his glove, and his hand started to expand.
Oh, no.
And he just went for it anyway. I'm just going to keep going. And so then when he got back to Earth, the hand was actually fine. The swelling went down after a couple of hours.
The pressure took effect.
In that case, it's just your hand. So you have nothing, no air that's trying to escape or nothing that can rupture. So it's just a slow swelling of the fluids in your hand. And that causes bad things to happen. And then one time, actually, there was this astronaut on a spacewalk who had a small hole in his glove. And he was lucky because it had some blood on it, I think, that sealed the hole.
Oh.
But that part was terribly bruised and bloody. You know, he didn't even notice it until he got back in.
So the ballooning of the body and the face and stuff, that could happen without pressure.
Yes, yeah. And happens.
So pressure is what's key. The pressure in the air is, or in the atmosphere is what holds our bodies together?
Right. So your skin, it's because it's a flexible membrane. You know, like if someone gets pregnant and then their belly stretches, then the skin takes that in. And it's the same thing. Your skin is just a really amazing membrane. So it stretches if it needs to. And so that if it had no pressure and you weren't being held in by the air, then the skin would stretch out.
Wow. I read somewhere that there is enough pressure on Mars that you wouldn't balloon like that. Or is that true or not?
So the pressure on Mars is about 6 millibars. Mm-hmm. It's still very low. So the amount of pressure you need, I think it's around 50 millibars. I could be wrong about this, but about 50 millibars is what's called the Armstrong limit. And that's where if you're in a plane, they put you in a pressure suit, but you can't go below 50 millibars with just a pressure suit holding you in. Then you need an actually pressurized spacesuit. So when pilots fly up in a cockpit high in the air, they actually wear a suit that provides pressure on their body so that they don't have these bad effects. And some of the people designing the next generation of spacesuits have this idea that instead of putting you in a suit with air pressure holding you in, they would just physically hold you in with a membrane.
So that was accurate then in the movie, that on Mars, they would have, if they didn't have anything protecting them, they would have ballooned like that.
Yeah, like if you're if so, they would die. I mean, probably instantly.
Instantly.
Well, within space, you would die within about 30 seconds if you remembered to breathe out. If you didn't remember to breathe out and your lungs ruptured, then you would die immediately. And so on Mars, I think the pressure is still low enough that your lungs would rupture if you didn't breathe out. But then, you know, if they breathed out and then, I don't know if your eyes would pop out or anything, but if someone didn't save you almost immediately, like if I were to be thrust onto Mars suddenly, I would release my breath, and I would put my hands over my eyes and mouth and close my mouth and then just hope that someone saves me within several seconds.
Oh, that's what you do. Put your hands on your eyes so that it's not going to...
I would do that. I would close my eyes so that my eyes, the water in my eyes wouldn't boil.
Oh,
yeah.
Good advice. Why does stuff boil without pressure?
So whether a liquid is a liquid or a solid or a gas depends both on pressure and temperature. And so, like, if I'm from Colorado, so if I'm boiling water in Colorado, then it goes into a gas more easily and at a lower temperature. A lot of recipes have to be changed because you're supposed to heat something up to a certain temperature and they say, bring this water to a boil.
Yeah.
It's not hot enough in Denver because it boils at a lower temperature. So we have this issue at Mars where it's a very interesting planet. The whole planet is right at the triple point of water, which is where water can exist as a gas, a liquid, or a solid. And so on Mars, you can have, we usually have gaseous water and a solid water, but we don't have a lot of liquid water, but it's just barely possible.
Whoa.
Whereas on the Earth, we're well into this area where you can have all three.
Right, right. Okay. Good to know. So if you guys are stuck on Mars, your helmet comes off, cover your face.
Cover your eyes.
Close your mouth.
Cover your eyes like Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't look
yeah.
at the spirits coming out of the Ark.
Look at the Ark of the Covenant.
So I wanted a few other points here about the film. So number one, I didn't realize that he says clever girl at one point when Sharon Stone is trying to distract him with her sexuality and the security guards are coming after him and he realizes it and he says clever girl. And I always just thought that's an obvious like Jurassic Park reference. But this predates Jurassic Park, so I wanted to get that in the clear that, you know, it was first. So from Total Recall from now on. And then secondly, you mentioned the huge woman disguise that he puts on, which I also love that scene and thought it was incredibly entertaining. But upon thinking about it, and this is probably one of those things you were mentioning where it's like, if it's a fantasy, okay, let's go with it. But if it's reality, couple huge problems. Number one, I think we would see from the X-ray thing that he has like a robotic structure on him.
Sure.
And then,
although there didn't seem to be an X-ray machine at the spaceport or wherever they
Martian
are.
Customs.
Whenever he's arrived in Mars, there doesn't seem to be. It seemed like the X-ray machines were at the subway station.
Oh, okay.
On Earth, you know. So maybe I don't know why they wouldn't have X-ray machines
right.
at a spaceport or whatever, but you know.
And then so he programs it, I guess, to say 2 weeks because this agent asks her how long are you staying, and she says 2 weeks. And then on the second question, there's no answer. Like
she
says 2 weeks again, right? Malfunction. And then, but then when he throws it, because it's also a bomb, so he's wearing a bomb on his face.
Yeah.
And then when he disconnects it and throws it, she says something.
Get ready for a big surprise.
Get ready for a surprise. Yeah. So I thought that was funny that it was but she is programmed to say that.
I think that it was just that. It was even though I'm on the side of that this is a fantasy, but logically it was. I think there was a malfunction in that moment where he was meant to be able to say whatever he wanted to.
Oh, it just
wasn't. Or maybe the head could say different things.
Yeah.
And respond appropriately to different things. But there was a malfunction in the moment when they asked if he brought a fruit or something like that or whatever that he wasn't supposed to say 2 weeks to, and then the face started malfunctioning or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, once he took it off, I think it started functioning somewhat properly
again. Now it's
again.
Put back together.
Yeah,
it restarted.
I just think it was a malfunction.
I thought that was so funny, that scene, though, just because it's like it seems like such an advanced piece of equipment and to malfunction so fast. We just got introduced to it.
Also, you know what's kind of neat is I imagine there was a woman actress who played that role.
Definitely.
And she does a really neat job, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when she's malfunctioning, you know what I mean?
And oh,
like,
totally.
She's starting to contort her face. I mean, that looks like that's just really her contorting her face.
Yeah.
Until at a certain point it becomes prosthetics. But it was, that's a great performance, actually, from that woman.
I hope she got a lot of roles from this movie. Yeah, because she was fantastic in that role. I thought that was so, and probably remembered, you know, from all time.
It's such a bizarre scene. I mean, the way the face malfunctions like that, and, you know, the way he's, I don't know, it's so cool, you know?
Yeah, very cool. Okay, so there's a hologram tennis trainer at one point.
Yeah.
And so now we're at the point in technology where we have holograms. They're very expensive. Obviously, you don't see them very often. But when I was doing my research, there's this guy, one of the leaders of hologram technology, is only selling it or like focusing on selling it to funeral homes because his view is like, oh, this is how holograms are going to be huge because people are going to want to come to funerals and see a hologram of this person that they miss, like giving them a, I don't know.
Like Tupac?
Yeah, exactly.
Saying goodbye. Tupac saying goodbye.
Yeah, Tupac saying goodbye. So I just wanted to ask you guys if you would do that. Like, would you have a hologram of yourself for your funeral? Like,
I'm old fashioned. I'd probably just go traditional.
Yeah, yeah.
Traditional. Well, yeah.
It would be a hologram in a casket.
Yeah. Well, I always wanted to have a Viking funeral, you know, where you put me on a raft and
the
then
water.
Shoot a flaming arrow. And
wow.
So I looked it up and it's actually illegal because you don't burn long enough. And so your body like falls into the lake and then comes back up sometime later on the shore, you know,
oh,
when you
no.
least expect. And so then I decided I would get cremated, put in a box, and then put on a raft.
Nice.
And then,
loophole. And let your
loophole.
Ashes fall into the water.
Into the
and
water.
That's fine.
Become part of the environment,
yeah.
the world.
Yeah.
Assuming
Fish
I
food.
Don't buy a die on Mars, in which case there probably won't be that many bodies of water for me to
that's
exploit
true.
In this manner.
Well, we'll get there because I do want to talk about terraforming later. So I think hopefully we can have a bunch of water on Mars. I'm just making that claim right now. Okay, so mutants. They talk about mutant humans. Oh, we're reaching there soon? Oh, okay. So let's take a break first.
We'll take a break?
We'll talk about mutants. We'll play some games. We'll get into how we're going to fix Mars
There's so much to talk about, I think, with regards to this movie. And
we'll just start doing this. We'll do a bonus episode once a week where we come and just talk about Total Recall.
Exactly. Or that's the whole entire podcast. It's like every episode is about Total Recall.
Yeah, you're
same
right.
Guess.
From now on, guys, there's not going to be any other films. We're only talking about Total Recall with the same guests. The podcast has changed, and you know what? I like it more now. We'll be right back.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
All right, we are back, excited about so much here to discuss about Mars and about mutants. But first, we're going to play a game, and the game is called Do You Totally Recall This?
Do you totally recall this?
Where Brent, our game master... You love games, right?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Video games, board games?
Yeah. Certainly.
All about it, from what I recall.
That's right.
I didn't realize I said
from what you recall, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so this game is basically like categories. I've given Brent a list of topics, a list of some movies, historical figures. I'm kind of giving you clues here now, but basically they're all over the place. And so without saying the name, she's going to have to guess, Dr. Laura Kerber, what you're talking about. So I'm going to put a minute on the clock.
Seems easy.
I think it's going to be a breeze, and it's a nice team building exercise
for
us here in the studio. Okay, so do you totally recall this? Begin.
Okay, he was assassinated, Lee Harvey Oswald.
JFK?
Yes. Hasta la vista, baby, quotes is from this.
Terminator?
The next one.
Terminator 2?
Yeah, and then, okay, so this is a car. It's a kind of very common car. What's the most common car? It's Japanese.
Toyota?
It's the other one.
Honda?
And what kind? Common one.
Honda.
It's not an Accord.
No.
It's not an Accord.
Honda.
You know,
another.
It's the smaller version of the Accord, basically. Yeah?
I'm a huge Toyota person, so I don't get into those.
Okay,
Hondas.
So what about this? Melts in your mouth, not in your hands.
M&Ms.
With a certain kind of thing in it.
Peanut M&M.
Yeah, yeah. All right, and then it's the alternative to an iPhone.
At Android.
Yeah, and then it's a planet, but with it's Mickey Mouse's thing.
Pluto.
Yeah, and I could have said dog. And then, you know those cigars?
Yeah.
Those special ones, the legal ones?
Cubans.
Okay, that's the first part. And the next part is...
That's
like,
it. That's time.
Oh, shoot.
Okay. I'll give you another 5 seconds because I want to see where the cigars went. But that was Cuban Missile Crisis. Yeah. All right, great. That was pretty good. You got almost all of them.
What's the Honda?
Really nice.
It was a Civic.
Honda Civic, okay.
That's my car.
I spent too long. We spent too long on that. Me too. It's my
no
car, too.
No offense to your car.
It's my car, too, yeah. Okay. We spent too long. I should have just moved on because we spent... I was like, oh, we're killing too much time on this one. We could have got... Maybe we could have got Cuban Missile Crisis. Yeah. I didn't even go with Bourne Identity yet because I was going to save that for last.
Oh,
I said
gotcha.
Matt Damon movie.
I mean, the Martian, obviously.
Oh, okay. So you would have had a speed bump there.
Yeah.
Okay, so... Before we get into the Mars stuff, I just wanted to talk about mutant humans because there are some mutants in this movie, and so I started Googling that. And so if you do that, there's a lot of weird shit you come up with. But I did find some stuff that was really interesting. So for example, do you guys know about tetrachromacy? Do you know what that is?
No.
Okay, so the average person can see about a million colors, but if you have... tetrachromacy, you can see up to 100 million colors.
Wow.
So oh, if you see more.
Yeah, like way more. It's a mutation of an opsin
so
gene.
It's a superpower.
You see more colors.
Yeah.
So
big time.
That means that you can't, those colors exist. We're not seeing them.
Correct.
Or is it that we can't distinguish them from one another?
I don't know. Maybe it's one or the other or both. I'm not sure. It says about 12% of women have it. This is usually a female thing here.
Oh, you mean they could see more colors than the average person?
Yes.
What does that look like, I wonder?
I have no idea. But apparently, so 12% of women have the mutation of their gene, but not the ability to develop tetrachromacy, but usually it's when they're very young that they start noticing these things, and then they do have this ability for life.
And
so
they
I found
put
that,
them in a special school, and they train them to use their powers.
That's
for,
correct. They live in an underground army base.
And they work for Home Depot paint department.
What I meant by what do they look like is not, what does it look like? I don't mean like, what do they see? I mean, what does that person look like?
Oh.
That has it.
I'm sure they look really similar, except for the innards of their eyes, I guess. Mm. Okay, and then there's hyperthymesia, which is a larger caudate nucleus. I'm probably butchering these pronunciations, but it basically means that they can remember. It's kind of like there was a lady from Taxi that had it. I can't remember her name, but it was like
Mary Lou Henner.
Yes, mm-hmm. She has like super memory abilities.
Right.
So people have that also, which is another mutation of a gene.
Oh.
And then there's a village in Argentina where 6,000 residents live, and they drink from a water supply that's laced with 80 times the amount of arsenic needed to kill one person. And they've been doing this for thousands of years, and as a result have developed a mutation of a gene, AS3MT, that helps push dangerous substances out of their system.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is where?
Argentina.
In Argentina, where?
Yeah, I don't know. All I have is a small village in Argentina. I do limited research.
We need to find it.
Yeah, but
that's
pretty
interesting.
Cool.
So they can beat diseases pretty quickly or easily.
Yeah, certain.
So they could be spies, maybe.
Totally.
Or just that specific... Or just arsenic.
Specifically arsenic.
Or just arsenic specifically.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they dare people to poison them.
You expose them to anything else, forget about it.
They're dead.
They're done. Yeah. It has to be arsenic, though.
I guess so. I mean, again, this is all I got, but I just thought that was really cool and proof of human mutants.
I wonder if the color thing makes it harder for them to see stuff or what, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Or just like live life, you know, because everything is so color coordinated for us. So maybe it's just confusing.
Or maybe they just see like everyone's outfits. They're like, oh, this is so horrible. Like,
nothing
shit,
matches.
Nothing matches.
Right.
You're like, oh, that's all blue. What do you want?
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe they have names for these colors. I don't know. Okay. And one more thing, which we talked about a little bit off mic, the self-driving car that they have in the movie. Now we have self-driving cars. Right. Johnny Taxi, I think they call
Johnny,
it.
Johnny Cab.
Johnny Cab. Sorry. Yes, that's right. So. And we did check during the break, and it was Rambo 3. So Brent was right about that. Nobody's surprised that I'm wrong. We have self-driving cars. I've seen them. I've not been in one. I wanted to ask for, you know, you guys, if you've had any experiences with that.
The closest thing I was in was a self-parking car.
Ooh.
My friend was for some reason, got to have one for a period of time.
Okay.
And so we were in it, and it self-parked. It parallel-parked.
Okay.
That sounds like
a success.
Yeah, I've only been in the cars that, you know, keep in the lane or stop if there's something in front of them. So it's like a midway between a self-driving car. But I often wondered if I would trust, because I kind of don't trust self-driving cars, but would I trust it more if there was like an animated robot guy driving it, making conversation with me.
Yeah.
Maybe I would.
I would be a little concerned to be in a self-driving car.
Me
I would
too.
Be scared. I don't trust it. I don't trust the robot.
Yeah.
So, by the way, speaking of, that brings to mind two things. One, some people might say Terminator 2 is a better Schwarzenegger movie than Total Recall. In my opinion, it's not, because, I mean, maybe as in one regard it is, but as far as a Schwarzenegger movie, since he's playing a robot in that movie, he doesn't have the range or the dynamic that he has, that his performance has in Total Recall. So if you want more of a dynamic Schwarzenegger experience, Total Recall is the way to go, because he's a robot in the other one, so he's pretty much kind of the same the whole way through.
Absolutely.
You know? Anyway, that's just one
point. Whereas if you get to see him in Junior or Twins, then it's mostly the funny side of him, and you don't get the action side. And so Total Recall, you get both action and hilarious.
And he's making jokes, too,
Oh, yeah, and like the timid Arnold, because sometimes he's just like this guy who's a construction worker.
Right, and he's romantic. He's romantic.
Oh,
too,
yeah,
you know? He's everything. You get all the Schwarzenegger facets, you know?
Yeah, big range.
And he's looking, you know, the construction worker part, he's showing it off.
Oh, yeah. No, he's jacked up.
Yeah. So, and then there was, the other thing, this is about a sort of weird question I had about Total Recall that doesn't matter, again, if this is a fantasy, but I don't understand their traffic system on Mars. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
They're just driving through these tunnels, and I'm thinking, why are there no other cars around, really?
Yeah, it's only one lane.
It's one lane.
Yeah.
And, I mean, maybe that is that direction's lane, but there's no backup or anything. There's no backed up. There's no other cars. It's just the taxi, and then at one point they're being chased by another car. But it seems as though the norm is that there's just one car going through this thing. How do you even have any kind of, you know, system that I don't understand
how
it doesn't seem like. To me, it's just that's why I think it's a dream, a fantasy. Also, is because it doesn't make sense to me, the traffic system.
Right.
It also seems
to be like the walkway for everyone, because there's just people around and like there's that construction machine that keeps pulling. Okay, what the hell is that? Okay,
yeah, but so in the non pedestrian zone, which is where the drillers are and stuff like that, there's just. I don't understand. There's only these tunnels with one car going through.
This is what I figured is you probably have a centralized habitation where all the people live, and then you have places where you're getting resources from, or you're going out to some mining place or something like that. And so maybe you would have along utility tunnels or places that you drive that most people don't go, so you wouldn't have traffic there. That's my...
Okay.
So it's just people aren't going there oftentimes.
Yeah. And, you know,
what if they're trying to get from one area to the next, like Venusville, right? Which is the sort of, you know, sleazier kind of place, right?
Totally.
Or whatever. But then there's like where the Hilton is, where he stays. He takes a taxi from one or the other, right? So I would imagine there's people going between those places often, and they're using this tunnel, whatever this weird tunnel road situation. And it's like also and I'd imagine that not everyone's using the. At one point I thought maybe there's only two taxis. There's the one guy and then the other guy, right? Benny, you know,
right.
It's just Benny and the other guy who's trying to be a spy or whatever. Benny's a spy. Yeah, Benny's not even a real taxi driver anyway. But then there's another guy who's trying to get him to take the taxi also. When he first gets to Mars. So there's two taxis.
Yeah.
And so, that way they can kind of manage, you know, going through the tunnels together. And then that means all those rich people that are hanging out in the other zones and stuff, they don't have their own cars. They don't have...
I don't know.
What do they take? You know, I don't know.
I feel like to have taxis, like, that already implies that there's a lot of other cars, right? You wouldn't start with
taxis.
That's
what I'm thinking, yeah.
So what the hell is that?
So that was one thing that I thought that kind of bothered me from a logistical standpoint, but doesn't bother me at all, you know, if I decide that it's a complete fantasy, you know.
Right. Which you wanted to talk about, and I think it's very interesting because there's a scene, it's so funny because there's a lot of movies, especially after Total Recall, that kind of take that theme of is it a dream, is it reality, is it a fantasy, whatever. And they not only is the whole movie pretty much about that, because they hit it right on the nose of like, you're going to a recall center, we're gonna implant this thing in your mind, this could go wrong, it has gone wrong in the past, like they are very upfront about all that stuff. And then halfway through the movie, a guy comes in and tells him straight up, you are in a dream. This is not real. You're about to be lobotomized. You need to take this pill, and that's a sign that you want to get out, right? And he sees a bead of sweat on him, and this is, so for a lot of people, this is like the pivotal scene that is deciding whether or not it's fantasy or reality.
But yeah.
But it's chaos.
But that bead of sweat, so indicating that the guy is nervous or whatever, and yeah, that he's lying or whatever.
Right.
And proving to Arnold Schwarzenegger's character, Doug Quaid.
Slash Hauser.
although I would... Or not really Hauser, you know, if you're considering
no,
his
right.
current identity. So is that he... that this is real, you know, that it's really happening.
Yeah.
But that aspect of it could be happening within this fantasy.
Totally.
So, you know, here's my... I have three or so
Take
reasons why I think this is a dream. One, in any movie, you know, an opening scene is sort of a thesis statement to a movie, you know,
yeah,
and it's sort of establishing what the movie's about. And the first scene in this movie is a dream. He's
yep.
dreaming, whether it's he's dreaming within a dream or what, I don't know. Here's the other thing. One thing is, like, if this is all a dream, when does the dream start, too? Does it start when he goes to the recall place and
mm-hmm.
they start the dream there? Or did the dream start as soon as the movie starts, too? That's another question. But anyway, there is a dream to establish that, you know, to me, establishes this is a dream, okay? Because there's a dream happening there.
Right.
Two, it fades to white at the end of the movie, which
yep.
to me implies that he's waking up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why else would it fade to white? Another thing is that the... There's many times during the film where things are predicted. You know, you mentioned it already, but kind of, I think. But there, a lot of the course of the events are already, they're kind of laid out beforehand. So
oh, right.
he says, you know, oh, how about do this thing where you can be a secret agent and you could save the planet, you know? Or
yeah.
save, you know,
and that's what happens.
That's exactly what happens.
Yeah.
Then,
and they pick the exact girl.
right.
Oh, that's
yeah.
the other thing, too, is that his dream girl, Rachel Ticotin, who is in the first dream that he has before going to recall,
mm-hmm.
is the girl that is the fabricated girl that is from the at,
well,
at the recall center.
Well, that's because he remembers her
from before, though, right?
Yeah,
but then
boom,
why would they
reality argument?
Boom.
Right, that's true.
That.
No, that's fair. But except for that, why would the recall place have that image of her there? You know what I mean? Unless the only possible combination of brunette, athletic, sleazy, and demure.
Is that girl.
The way that Rachel Ticotin looks, you know? That's the only combination of those things that could look like, right? That's one other explanation.
Since they already took away his memory as Hauser, they had all of those memories that they could draw from, and they just drew random people from such memories, and there she was.
Well, I wasn't sure that Recall was in on the operation, though.
That's true. That they were only just messing with his memory, and that's what caused
I think that's
all
what caused the problems. If this was
right.
Yeah,
because
so,
they did. Yeah, they freaked out when.
But then, yeah. So I think that because the plan wasn't for him to go to Recall. The plan of Cohagen was for them to just do this project, and then he said you created a problem when you went to this Recall place because it messed with the thing that we were trying to do or whatever.
Yeah.
So the fact that Rachel Ticotin was at the recall place as a, you know, a synthetic creation or whatever.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I don't know, something. And then also the one of the scientists there says, a blue sky at Mars, that's new, or I haven't seen that before or whatever. And that's what happens at the end of the movie, is you see a blue sky in Mars or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, in an interview with Paul Verhoeven, he said he thinks that it's a dream.
Oh, okay. So
but he did leave it ambiguous. He did leave it ambiguous.
Very
but
ambiguous.
He
yeah.
does. He says his guess is that it's a dream. But
right.
Well,
right.
Let me lay down my argument, which
please.
Is that I just don't have an argument, and I just really want it to be true.
Yeah. That's you know what
because
that is
it would
a good argument.
Just,
that's
like,
a good argument.
It's way cooler that way.
That is a good argument
because it is. Yeah, it feels like almost a cop out, but I lean more towards Brent just because of the evidence that the film presents. The intro is a huge one for me, starting with a dream, like letting you know this might not be all, what you think it is at any point in the film, and then the ending is another big one. But it is more fun to think of it as reality.
Certainly. The only problem I have with that, really, my biggest plot problem when it being real is that Benny is all of a sudden, the facility where they're going to plant the old memories back into, well, Arnold Schwarzenegger and I guess a new one for Rachel Ticotin's character, is that it's right really close to the pyramid place, you know, whatever. And so they're able to kind of just get there really quickly, which is odd that's it's just coincidentally close, or it's easily close, right? And then Benny just happens to be waiting there with one of those driller machines, mm-hmm. and he's to kill them. And then in trying to kill them, true. He accidentally opens up the passageway that leads to the place.
Oh my God.
That just seemed
ridiculous.
A little too convenient to
yes,
me, you know?
Yes,
it's
yes.
so convenient that and so contrived that I thought, this has got to be a dream, or I'm having a problem with this if it's not, if yeah. this is real. You
and
know?
A lot of the plan, even when they, you know, do the classic, like, evil guy lays out his plan thing, a lot of the planning seems ridiculous. It seems like a dream where, you know, when you're in a dream and, like, you have kind of a mission, like a thing that you know you have to do, but you don't know why and you don't question it. A lot of the movie felt like that.
Well, the
just
movie
like,
felt like, oh, the action hero, he does all the right moves and he saves the day and there are all these things that happen as if it was a concocted action story, you know, mm-hmm. which is what they claimed it to be. My only question is I don't know when the dream starts. Does it start from the beginning of the movie?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I would say the recall place.
The
if
recall
I had to,
place.
If you told me for a fact, this is not reality, this was a dream, I would assume it's at the recall place where uh-huh. they put him under and
I
then.
I concur.
Yeah, from
the
then on.
The reason
it's
why
madness.
I wouldn't think it is, though, is because. You know, the fact that he's, like, so interested in Mars mm-hmm. and that he's a construction worker.
That's a normal thing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. You're right. It is a normal thing. But for a construction worker to be interested in Mars, like, if you were working the construction sites, and you mm-hmm. were drilling, you know, and then I think that was interesting, you know.
Yeah,
but,
well, then I would think, well, I used to be a forklift operator.
Is that true?
So, yeah, back in the day.
Okay, you know what?
I worked at a warehouse.
Yeah, you know what? So then I think we're really kind of establishing here that the dream starts at the recall place.
At the recall place. I mean, people are on Mars living in the, you know, where he's a construction worker.
Yeah,
so
right.
there's even more of a presence.
Yeah,
of,
and if you think about it.
So interested
if,
in the news.
If you were a construction worker and your job is digging and constructing things, the ultimate job you can have is doing all of that stuff on Mars.
Oh,
that's
new territory.
Yeah,
sure.
New territory, yeah, yeah. Building a new
it's
world.
It's also interesting cool. that he's interested in politics. Like, he's interested in news. He's interested
right,
in
yeah.
Cohagen for some reason.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, it seems like Sharon Stone's character is trying to get him to not look at that stuff.
Right.
And so that's, but you know, that all could just be a coincidence. And mm-hmm. yeah, maybe perhaps the dream does start at recall.
Yeah, I honestly feel like the whole intro to the movie is just to make you feel like what the hell's going on here, right? It's mm-hmm. just every turn is like, I don't know, to get you more interested in me. Like, I don't know if I trust her. I don't know if I trust the news. I don't know about this.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's go to some Mars questions. Let's go to some hardcore science here because there's so much to get to. And there's been some crazy developments on Mars lately. And so I feel like you're the perfect person to ask about this. So first of all, the opportunity.
Yes.
Can you tell us what's been going on? Because there's a dust storm that's been like taking over Mars and we've lost communication with the opportunity. So where are we at here?
So there was every couple of years, it's hard to predict when it's going to happen, but there's a global dust storm on Mars. So,
a global dust storm.
Yeah. So most years we have a dusty season and we have regional dust storms on Mars. And this is the same kind of stuff like a couple weeks ago in Arizona, they had a huge dust storm that came rolling in and you can see how that looks. They have tons of pictures of it. So this kind of thing that usually happening on Mars, we have tons of dust and it gets really hot in the summer and then turbulent atmosphere create a dust storm. And occasionally that dust storm encircles the globe. So a couple cases in the past, we've had spacecraft that arrived at the planet and they were ready to start taking pictures in the 1970s. And then they look upon the surface, they can't see anything. The whole thing is shrouded in dust. So
wow.
Back a number of years ago, Opportunity encountered its first dust storm. And it had a hard time because it's a solar powered rover and it needs the sun to survive. And so we almost lost it back then, almost a decade ago. But then it survived. And so this time,
when you say lost it, sorry, you mean like not physically?
Yeah,
like it's not physically
that we
damaged.
Don't know where it is.
Right.
Yeah, it's just that if its power gets too low, mm-hmm. then it shuts down.
Got it.
And then actually, the worst thing that can happen is if you it has a clock on board,
mm-hmm.
and so the clock tells it what time it should be talking to us.
Okay.
And so if it doesn't know what time it is, it doesn't know what time to talk to us. Mm. We don't know what time to listen for it.
Got you.
Yeah. So in this particular case, it was really, really thick dust storm. Normally on Mars, you might get, we call the opacity of the atmosphere that we measure by just looking straight at the sun and seeing how bright it should be and how bright it is.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, you know, it might be 0.5 or maybe up to 1 is pretty dusty. And this time it was over 10. Wow. And it's a logarithmic scale. So just enormous amount of dust. And Jeez. So on the other side of the planet is Curiosity. And that's a nuclear-powered robot. And so it doesn't care. It's fine. But it was fascinating to see because you see suddenly it's really dusty over Opportunity. And it took quite a while for that dust to reach all the way to the other end of the globe and so that Curiosity could see it.
Just out of curiosity, what is the size of Mars in comparison to Earth?
So the surface area of Mars is about the same as the continents of the Earth. So it's about one-third. Yeah, mm-hmm. One-third the surface area.
Okay, yeah, wow. Okay.
And why does this, you know, how could a dust storm encompass the entire planet? Why would that happen?
Well, it's really interesting because here on the Earth, we have different levels of the atmosphere. We have the troposphere, where all of our weather takes place. And that takes place because it's hot on the bottom and it's cooler towards the top.
Okay.
So the hot stuff wants to rise and it's constantly changing position. And then we have the ozone layer. And the ozone layer is really hot because it's absorbing all the UV rays and protecting us. And so it forms a stratified layer that's hot on top and cold on the bottom called the stratosphere. And that's why we fly our planes up to 30,000 feet and we fly it through the stratosphere because we want to avoid all the weather.
Gotcha.
So on Mars, there is no oxygen and there's no ozone layer. Ozone's made is O3. Okay. And so
but there used to be, right?
So there's a little bit of oxygen, just enough to rust things, but there's not like a lot of oxygen, and there never was.
Well, there never was.
Didn't they discover like a trace of water or something on Mars?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's actually a lot of water on Mars.
Oh, there is. Okay, yeah.
But most of it's frozen, and then there's some of it in a vapor phase. And there's actually clouds on Mars made out of water ice, and we have these little animated GIFs of the clouds going by overhead. So
there's no, there hasn't been discovered any living plants or anything on
no.
Mars, right?
Yeah, we keep looking. We are always looking,
now,
but we haven't
found it. Do you believe that there is possible to find life form on Mars?
I think so.
Since there was water?
Yeah, so we found in the past, you know, billions of years ago, that Mars had lakes and rivers and carved these huge valleys.
Oh,
and
really?
Some of these rivers and lakes must have been around for thousands of years. And so that makes us think, okay, we think that life could be easily made, perhaps, and then it should have lived on Mars because we had this environment that seems suitable for it. But since we only have one experiment as far as life goes, we don't know how long it takes to make life or how it is made. And so we can't necessarily say that since there was a habitable environment, there must have been life there. So NASA's been doing this stepped approach to say, is there water on Mars? Yes, we found tons of water. Most of it's frozen at the poles or underground, which is another Total Recall moment, because there actually is a lot of stuff under the surface,
the
like water,
glacier.
That you could melt, you know.
Yeah.
And so
if that stuff was melted, could that, in Total Recall, create an atmosphere the way it does?
So it couldn't. It could never create an atmosphere fast enough.
Yeah.
And then the missing part is you need all of this pressure. And on the Earth, we have, you know, 80% nitrogen and 20% oxygen. There's no nitrogen hiding out anywhere. And so you'd have to get that from somewhere. Or you'd have to, if you had the whole atmosphere filled with another inert gas like argon or something, and then just have oxygen. Or maybe you could have a whole atmosphere made out of oxygen. But yeah, the tricky part is to make it all fast enough and to have enough stock hidden in the ground so that you could make it. Like,
do you think it's possible that we could live on Mars, or people could live on Mars as a colony?
Yeah, I mean, people could live on Mars now, like the way that they live on Mars in Total Recall, in a habitat that's enclosed.
Yeah,
we have technology to do that. I think where there's a will, there's a way. Like,
would you move there?
I would go there.
Like she would.
Yeah, I mean, I would go there for vacation. I often say, I often say, if someone said, "Do you want to go to the moon?" I would go right now. I'd say, "Yes, of course I would." If someone said, "Do you want to go to Mars?" I'd have to think about that a little bit, because the journey is terrible for your body, you know.
Really?
You're subject to all this radiation. And
you would take the Hohmann transfer?
Yeah, correct? Exactly.
You're subject to radiation from what? The trip or actually being on the planet?
So both.
Okay.
It's worse on the trip, actually,
yeah.
Because the magnetosphere of the Earth and the ozone layer the magnetosphere and the ozone layer protect us from charged particles from the sun and from UV rays and all of this radiation that exists in the galaxy, galactic cosmic rays, everything. And so once you're outside of the magnetosphere's protective shell, then you're bombarded from all sides with particles. And the Apollo astronauts, they said when they closed their eyes, they could see little points of light. Whoa. And it was actually little charged particles hitting their retina.
Really?
Yeah. Which, I mean, every single time something hits you like that, it's destroying something. And so
just
that's
out of curiosity,
what causes mutations.
Is there a high rate of cancer among astronauts?
There isn't. And actually, if you look at the Apollo astronauts, they're a lot of them live to quite advanced age. Mm-hmm. And it's a matter of probability. So if you get a bunch of rays hitting you, just like if you go sunbathing all the time, you're increasing your probability of getting cancer, but you're not going to get cancer 100%.
Right.
And so some of the ideas they have is, why don't you take, you're increasing your chance of getting cancer over your lifespan by a certain amount. Mm-hmm. And so one of the ideas was, why don't you send someone older in their 60s to Mars, and then the amount of increased probability they have of getting cancer over the amount of years they would normally live anyway, then you're playing a game of numbers and it's be fine.
Yeah.
But if you sent a child to Mars, then you know, you are kind of increasing that person's risk over the span of their life.
By the way, is that a goal of yours, is to go into space at one point?
I mean, I would love to go into space.
Okay, we can make that happen.
Is that something that you could be eligible to do?
Well, so a number of years ago, there was an astronaut call, and literally everyone I knew applied to this call.
Yeah, I was told they made like a big thing, like a larger than normal.
Yeah, well, the call
promotion
came out right around the time that The Martian came out.
Okay.
And so everyone was like, oh yeah, I'm going to apply.
And so did you apply?
I did, yeah.
Okay, wow.
And one of my friends who went to Caltech, she applied and she was actually selected.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Jessica
Were
Watkins.
Were you jealous?
Ooh.
Of course.
Shout out.
Yeah. Yeah, so now she's down in Houston starting her new life as astronaut candidate.
Wow.
Everyone was so excited.
It's within the realm of possibility for you to become an astronaut at one point.
I mean, yeah, it depends on how many astronauts. They take very few, and so
right.
A call comes every once in a while, and everyone goes crazy.
Would you be scared to go into space?
I mean, I would be more excited than scared.
Yeah.
Wow.
You have to trust the engineers that make the giant rocket that you strap yourself to.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know enough of them. I think they're pretty careful people. So
okay.
I think I would
space
trust
is
them.
Crazy, huh?
Yeah.
I would go to the moon in a second. Crazy. It's so scary. I mean, it's crazy how vast it is, right?
Yes.
Oof. And all the rate, like, I didn't even think I would be scared.
Yeah, I never even thought about that aspect of
yeah,
the radiation.
Exactly.
We have certain missions, like we're studying the sun because you have these solar storms that happen, and then they put out bursts of radiation into the solar system.
Whoa.
And so we study them. At one point, we had a spacecraft at Mercury and a bunch at the Earth, and then one at Mars, and then one way out in the outer solar system, and we could track this burst of radiation as it came through the whole solar system.
Wow.
And so those kind of things, the big ones, they could kill you instantly. And so the Apollo astronauts, they were looking at, okay, when did these bursts happen versus when the Apollo astronauts went to the moon? And there were a couple of those types of bursts during that time period when we were doing the moon thing, but just didn't happen to be when anyone was in space.
Ugh.
And so these are the challenges that NASA's working on. How to build good radiation shielding so that you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
And then the other bad thing that happens to you in space is, since you're weightless all the time, you're not putting weight on any of your bones or muscles.
Right, right.
So your bones and muscles atrophy.
Yeah.
So you have to exercise all the time to keep
right.
that from happening. And weird stuff happens, like your eyeballs might change shape just a little bit, and so then your vision changes.
Is it because your eyeballs are more malleable than other parts
of
your body?
It's just, yeah, they're malleable, and then you're not under the pull of gravity, so they're just subject to different forces. And one of the astronauts came back slightly taller because he didn't have this pressure on his vertebra.
Really? We should go.
Yeah.
Come back, play some more basketball.
I think you went back to being this normal size.
Without the pressure,
afterwards.
Maybe the pressure that's holding my muscles down, like kind of imploding my muscles right now, it won't be there, so I could be looking Schwarzenegger-esque.
Yeah.
We could come back.
And, be jacked up.
You could be the next Schwarzenegger Stallone. That's for sure.
Next Rambo 3.
I've always thought of you and I as the next Schwarzenegger Stallone, anytime I picture it in my head.
Yeah.
Okay, we're running out of time. I feel like there's so much more to discuss, honestly, and I know we don't want to watch the new Total Recall, but I feel like we should do a part two of this podcast and just watch the other one so that we can get together and talk about Mars.
Yeah.
I mean, even though they don't go to Mars.
We'll get together and talk about Australia. It's great.
Okay, so I'll lie to you and say that it's just this one again.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll watch the new one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll play along. I mean, I'll just talk about the old one again.
Is there something you want to plug before we go? I know Appealing to the Mainstream is a fantastic stand-up special. If you guys haven't seen it, please go watch it.
It's on Amazon Prime. You can see it for free if you have Amazon Prime.
Boom.
Appealing to the Mainstream, Amazon Prime. You can also, if you don't use Amazon or don't want to use it, you can buy it on iTunes.
There you go.
But when does this come out?
Probably like 2 weeks, something like that.
2 weeks. Okay. So then I'm doing some live dates on October 11th through the 14th.
Okay.
They will be in Brooklyn, New York at the Knitting Factory. That's not the 11th. On the 12th will be the Good Good Comedy Theater in Philadelphia. Then the Drunken Unicorn in Atlanta, Georgia on the 13th, and then on the 14th, the Comedy Loft in Washington, D.C.
Wow, you're traveling.
It's a little mini tour, and I'll be doing it with my friend DJ Doug Pound.
Who, oh, great.
Maybe some jazz people are familiar with.
Absolutely, right? Yeah, we love Doug Pound, of course.
So that's that into the special online, yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, please check out Brent's stuff. It's phenomenal. I can't say it enough. I've seen you multiple times, and it's always fantastic.
Thank you.
Dr. Laura Kerber?
Can I plug something?
Plug anything you want.
So, in the end of November, NASA will be landing another mission on Mars, and it's called InSight. And
that's right.
It's a seismometer, and it's going to be measuring the heat flux of Mars and also the size of the core and if there's any Mars quakes. So we're all very excited for that to happen.
It passed halfway recently, did it not?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
And then there's another mission, NASA mission, going to an asteroid called OSIRIS-REx, and it's an asteroid sample return mission. And just a few days ago, we got the first images of the asteroid that they're approaching. So,
great.
Very exciting.
Can people go see that online?
Yep.
How can they?
Okay. Yeah. I'm sure if you look on NASA.gov or related websites, then you'll find all that
stuff. Can I ask a really quick, silly little question that I could probably look up later? How small is the moon, I should say, compared to the Earth? I mean, what would you say in comparison to the Earth?
Let's see. I don't have a good number.
Is it
like
a fourth of the Earth?
Yeah, it's probably smaller than that. There's some pictures that they've taken where they have the Earth and the moon in the same frame.
Yeah.
So you can look and see kind of the moon is extraordinarily large for a satellite. No other body in the solar system has such a large moon. And the moon actually stabilizes the Earth's wobble so that we have a climate that's really stable. And so that helps life exist
on Earth.
How long
would it take to walk around the moon?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I just feel like we have such perfect circumstances here for life. I didn't even know that about the moon, like protecting us.
Right, right.
And why?
No, I know. It is crazy how many, all the right things happen on for this planet.
For so long.
To have, you know, living.
You know what I think that means? That this is all a dream.
Oh, you're right. It's too perfect.
It's too perfect.
It's coincidental.
Right. Yeah. In the vast galaxies that are out there, there must be another combination that was just as perfect. And
boy, I hope so. But until then,
what do those people look like?
We're in trouble, I think. We need to take care of this one. So, you know, vote. I don't know what else they can do.
Vote yes on Prop 187.
Yeah, and save our world, please. Okay, we'll see you next time. Thank you guys for being here.
Thanks for having me. Both of us. Thanks for having both of us.
You're welcome. Only you, Brent.
On behalf of JPL and the rest of the crew, thanks for having us.
Anytime. Bye.
Bye.
Bad Science is hosted and produced by me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our associate producer is Megan Bates.
And our executive producer is Brett Kushner.
Sorry, terrible Arnold impersonation. I tried. Anyways, follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Show and send us an email at badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. You can let us know what movies you'd like us to do or a fun game we should play or a review of this podcast. And I think that is all for now. Oh, I'd like to also thank Brent Butler for playing Quato on the intro. Very fun. Okay, bye.